passing out $100 bills, and it kills and it thrills like the horn. Hello everybody, this is Buck with the rubberchickensblog.com, and welcome to another edition of Buckshots, where we are reviewing every South Carolina football season since 1987. We are now up to the year 2005, which is a very special year, I guess you could say it was, in South Carolina football history. And since it's a special year, we've got a special guest, Mr. Connor Tapp from the Half Cocked Show and from GarnetAndBlackAttack.com is going to help us walk through the 2005 season. Connor, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me on. I hope I don't disappoint the people too much with this. I don't have any like sides of Macbeth or The Tempest prepared or any like comparisons to 20th century English literature or anything that I'm going to be able to throw out like T-Bone did.
Well, you know, T-Bone is a little bit like Jorge Stevens, in that you're just never
annoyingly smart.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's because you never, whenever he starts something like that, you're just like, where is that going? And then by the end, it's like, that was really good, you know, and it just kind of pisses you off that it's as good as it is. But anyway, we'll do our thing and hope people enjoy it. So what had happened at the end of 04, where just a really bizarre ending to the season, we kind of knew Holtz was leaving, and we kind of knew that Spurrier was coming before the Clemson game, and then the Clemson game happens, the fight, you know, a big embarrassing scene for both teams, and then all of a sudden, Steve Spurrier is your head coach 2 days later, so it's this embarrassment, disappointment, and then Steve Spurrier, the Steve Spurrier, becomes your head coach. So it was a very exciting time, right on the tail of a you know, highly embarrassing situation, and really a disappointing ending to the Holtz era at South Carolina. Now, Connor, I was trying to remember why we knew Spurrier was going to be introduced. I mean, it was kind of this just rumor that got loose. Do you remember? It wasn't on the news or anything like that. There was no official announcement. I just remember everybody saying, Spurrier's coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think back in late 2004 or late 2005 that he was introduced, but I don't remember. But the message boards that I was haunting at the time, you know, it started off like, you know, Steve Spurrier looking at a lake house at Lake Murray or something like that, and then these reports just seemed to become less and less crazy, and very much like with the Lou Holtz thing, it just sort of turned into, wow, this is really happening. I don't understand it. But as far as like how we knew about it, I don't really know.
Yeah.
Message boards for me.
Yeah. I guess that's probably it too. And there was kind of a cool factor when Lou Holtz came to South Carolina that we thought we would never experience again. That was just completely blown away by Steve Spurrier coming. It was like, you can't imagine us really doing better than Lou Holtz, which is hard to imagine today as we look back on it. But the Spurrier was, man, we were fired up about it. Had a huge crowd at the spring game that year, and started the season on a Thursday night, ESPN against Central Florida. And Central Florida came in, they had lost 15 consecutive games. So it was almost like the perfect setup for Spurrier's debut. And I remember game day being there, and I had come back from Charlotte on a business trip, and I remember I purposely left in plenty of time, and I got home right at about 6 o'clock and watched all the pregame. Were you watching when Lee Corso made his statement about Spurrier never winning an SEC championship?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I saw it live, but it was hard to miss replays of it. And yeah, that was definitely sort of the defining meme. I don't think the term meme had even maybe been invented yet, but sticking it to Corso was like all Gamecock fans could care about for the first, you know, 4 or 5 years of Steve Spurrier being there. And I don't think I don't think they had it. Was it before the UCF game that he said that?
Yeah, I believe it was. I believe okay. it was. Yeah,
like in the pregame show.
Yeah, because they had game day or a reasonable facsimile of game day there in right. the fairgrounds. Because I remember and the musicians that we kind of interact with on Twitter are going to be just very upset with me about this. You know, George is going to be upset, and Cloninger and Daryl Slater and all those guys.
Wait, Cloninger acknowledges you guys on Twitter?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Because certainly does not.
But there's a special place in my heart for Big and Rich because they played in the fairgrounds before the game. Do you recall that? Did you go to the game, first of all? You said
yeah,
you were,
I was
you're
at the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a sophomore. I was at the game, which is probably why I don't remember seeing the Corsa thing live. But I totally forgot about the Big and Rich thing.
Yeah, yeah. So Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy has a special place in my heart, which is just going to disappoint a lot of people, probably including my wife, if she ever listened to
Wait,
this.
That's a Big and Rich jam? I thought that was our good buddy Kenny Chesney. I don't know.
They're close. I mean, I can understand the confusion there.
Okay.
So we come out, and I think we scored on it was one of the first three or four plays. Blake Mitchell was a starting quarterback, and he hit Noah Whiteside on a 49-yard touchdown pass. And then we scored again with about 7 minutes left in the first quarter, and we're up 14-0 on this team that had lost 15 games in a row, and we're thinking we're going to cruise, right? But the rest of the game was either even or we got outplayed. So all of this buildup and all of this excitement, you know, kind of dwindled towards the end. Central Florida scored 12 points in the fourth quarter, and the final was 24-15. So we were a little – I remember being a little nervous after that, thinking maybe this season isn't going to be quite as good as we thought. Did you get that sense in the stadium? I mean, what was the vibe like? Do you remember much of it?
Not a whole lot. I definitely vividly remember the 49-yard strike to Noah Whiteside because, like, that was, you know, the height of being excited about Noah Whiteside.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But, I do remember excitement early on, and frustration is, like, the general emotion that I remember from that game. And I mean, yeah, I went through that, and really that game is kind of a microcosm for the first several years of the Steve Spurrier era, getting off to a great start and then kind of, you know, struggling a little bit later on.
Right. Yeah. So we headed to Athens the following week in a game where I don't think we felt like we had much of a chance just because of the way that Central Florida game ended. And a guy named Sidney Rice emerged. He didn't play in the first game against Central Florida because he had tweaked a knee, I believe, in warm-ups before the Central Florida game. So he didn't play against them and came out against Georgia and made a couple of catches that made us think maybe this guy might be pretty good. And we gave Georgia a run, but fell to them 17-15. And they had DJ Shockley was finally – DJ Shockley was a guy at Georgia that sat around for 3 years waiting for David Green and finally got his chance. He was on that Georgia team. So they beat us 17-15, and they were ranked number 9 at the time. Not a terribly disappointing loss, I wouldn't say, do you think?
Well, as I recall, I have to preface this by saying something very embarrassing that our music snob Twitter friends are also going to get onto me about, is that I did not watch a down of this game live because I was in Charlotte at a Coldplay concert. Yeah, so to give you a bit of an indication of how my priorities have shifted right. over the years, there you go. But back to the game itself, if I recall, the 2-point margin of defeat was due in part to a missed point after. Is that right? And I think we I don't know. Maybe I'm screwing this up. Am I?
No, you're not. That is correct. Which we missed the extra point on our first after our first touchdown. And it was a Jonathan Joseph 42-yard interception return for a touchdown, which I, for some reason, don't remember. Like I'll say, as I go back through this thing, I just don't remember. You would think a Jonathan Joseph 42-yard interception return for a touchdown in that game would be burned in my memory. But anyway, we missed the extra point after that. Yeah, exactly. So the kicking game bites us again.
Right, because we scored a touchdown late, and had we made that, we could have maybe gone for two or something like that.
Yeah, we scored the touchdown late to make it 17-15, and then we couldn't get the 2-point conversion.
Oh, okay.
And there was about 6 or 7 minutes left, and I think we got the ball back, but didn't do much with it. So I think that game made us feel okay until Alabama came to town for the third game of the year, and that was I do remember this one pretty well. That was a 3:30 CBS game. We got the prime spot on CBS that week because it was Alabama and because it was Steve Spurrier, and it was a pretty good Alabama team. They started the season 9-0, and part of that was a 37-14 win over South Carolina. Another home game that really just wasn't very close that I recall.
Yeah, it looks like Alabama got out to a pretty big lead early, and it was, you mentioned it was the 3:30 CBS game, and it was oppressively hot.
I do, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and my girlfriend actually fainted during the game. We hadn't been drinking or anything. I wouldn't discover that phenomenon until the 2006 season, which is a lot of why I told you I'd do the 2005, because my 2006 memories of the football team are much hazier as a result of me discovering pre-game tailgating. It was so hot that she passed out from heat exhaustion without actually having been drinking, so I had to care for her, and we went home early, but it wasn't a game that really needed me to stick around for it. So,
come back the following week at home and beat Troy. And then I think Blake Mitchell got hurt maybe in the Troy game, and he couldn't play the following week at Auburn. So you remember who the starting quarterback was against Auburn?
Antonio Hefner.
And do you remember what happened at the very beginning of that game after we received the opening kickoff?
I sure don't.
We called two timeouts before we ever ran a play.
Okay, yeah. That's coming back to me.
That is stuck in my head forever. Unfortunately, that's the memory I'll have of Antonio Hefner forever, either down the ball or we ran the kickback. Confusion on the first play, we called a timeout, and came to the line of scrimmage and called another. So two timeouts before we ever ran a play from scrimmage. And the other thing I remember about that game vividly is Spurrier being on the sideline, and he was wearing glasses, and he was not wearing a visor or a hat of any sort. And I remember thinking he looked so old. I mean, he looked so, and I thought, he is not going to be around for very long when I saw him. And I felt kind of sorry for him. I was like, why did you come to South Carolina and do this to yourself, coach?
Yeah, I saw a picture of him wearing glasses on somewhere on the internet recently, and I was like, I do not remember this. Yeah. But I guess was that something that he did throughout that season, or was it just a one-off kind of thing?
I saw a clip. I think maybe the Tennessee game later that year he had glasses on, but I don't know. I'm not sure why he was wearing glasses at points during the 2005 season, but Sidney Rice actually caught a touchdown pass in that game late. I mean, very late from Hefner. And that was 1, 2, 3. That was the fourth consecutive game he had caught a touchdown pass. And he would actually run that streak to 8 games, which I think is a South Carolina record. After the Auburn game, we hammered Kentucky 44-16. The
South Carolina Vanderbilt game was on October 22nd. I think that was the only game I actually attended in person. And what happened in that game, Jay Cutler was a quarterback for Vanderbilt, and Savelle Newton just went crazy that night. He had a touchdown. He had one running, one receiving, and I wanted to say he had one passing, but anyway, he was tearing it up that night and tore his Achilles on, I think, his last touchdown. And I just remember him sitting on the sideline with a towel draped over his head, and I heard that he had torn his Achilles. And Achilles is worse than an ACL because it's a longer recovery time, and I think he lost like 0.4 of a second off his 40 time, and he was never really, really the same after that. But, you know, it's hard to believe Jay Cutler was at Vanderbilt back then. But you were at that game. Any memories of it?
Yeah, it feels weird to say this about a South Carolina Vanderbilt game from the mid-2000s, but that's one of my favorite. I mean, that's one of the best games I can recall being in person. I mean, it was just back and forth. It was, you know, like a last team to have the ball kind of situation. And yeah, Savelle Newton, you know, just had an amazing performance. I see he had 85 rushing yards. Did he line up? Was he lining up in the backfield during that game? Or I honestly don't remember.
He did. He lined up at quarterback, receiver, and tailback at different points during the game.
Yeah, and I guess the Achilles was obviously a big setback. But when I think back on him and just how talented he was and how many different things he could do, like, it's kind of baffling to me that he didn't leave South Carolina with just so many school records. And I think even Steve Spurrier has made some comments lately sort of lamenting not having Savelle Newton, like, maybe be the quarterback and, you know, running the read option. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's absolutely, I guess that the idea, the read option, the type of offense we run today probably was just not much of a thought when he had a guy like Blake Mitchell who could sling it around like he liked to do. So we hit a string of games after that really kind of defined the season and gave us a lot of hope for the future. We went to Tennessee the following week, night game on ESPN, and really tight game all the way down to the stretch, all the way down to the end of the game. And Josh Brown, wasn't it Josh Brown who was the kicker at the time?
Yep, Josh Brown. Yep.
Hitting a 49-yard field goal. And I don't know exactly what I was thinking at that moment, but if we're lining up for a 49-yard field goal to try to win a ball game, I was probably thinking we had about a 5% chance of making that kick.
Yeah, and you mentioned this on a previous one of these Buckshots. Until we got to Ryan Succop, it had been a really long time since we had a place kicker that you wanted kicking anything outside of 30 yards. And so, yeah, this Tennessee game was one that I just wanted so badly. Like, at this now, I think I want the Georgia game the most of any conference game that we have, but at this point, you know, we had beaten Georgia somewhat recently. I will get to Florida a little bit later, but Tennessee just seemed like one of those teams where, I know it kind of defies logic and reason to say this, but it just kind of felt like there was a mental block with the way some of these recent games under the Holtz era had gone, where we had even had leads and just kind of squandered them away. So, yeah. A lot of tension when Josh Brown goes to kick that 49-yard field goal, and that's one of the best moments of my Gamecock life, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I think I went to bed really, really late that night, and then the next day I couldn't stop reading. You know, I was just looking for more articles to read about the South Carolina-Tennessee game. And you know, Sidney Rice had a huge game, had a couple of touchdowns, and but Kenny McKinley really emerged in this game. And I don't know if you remember, particularly late, we had three or four third down conversions where we hit Kenny McKinley on a slant. And I was thinking, man, this kid's a freshman, and you know, what is he even doing out there making plays like this in such a big game? So that was my first real memory of Kenny McKinley too.
Yeah, I don't remember his particular individual performance, but before we move on to the next game, I just want to highlight. Oh, and I wrote about this at Garnet Black Tech. Sorry to plug my blog on your podcast.
No, go right ahead.
Before the last Tennessee game, like, I think maybe some younger fans maybe don't know, like, how much we hated Tennessee back then. Like, after suffering through years of losing to the Clawsons, and was it Rick Clawson that had the frosted tips? And I don't know, I just hated losing those Clawson boys and getting killed by the Colquitt brothers and Phil Fulmer, and it was this game. Well, yeah, couldn't read enough about it.
Well, and after. Yeah, and we, you know, Tennessee was a team that was always really good, and most of the time we played them really well, but just couldn't get over the hump. There were a couple of Holtz years where Tennessee scored a touchdown late in the fourth quarter to beat us, and it was one of those situations where we just couldn't stop them. They just shoved the ball down our throat and decided, it's like, okay, well, we're going to go win the game now. You guys sit back and watch.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and to compound things for me, until this year when they've moved it up a weekend, the Tennessee game would always fall on my birthday weekend. So my childhood was filled with, you know, my birthday dreams being ruined in Williams-Brice Stadium by the Tennessee Volunteers. So
you're a Halloween baby?
Yeah, October 28th.
All right. So the following week, everybody send Connor birthday cards October 28th.
Put that
in your
account. Our show at gmail.com.
The next week, speaking of Kenny McKinley, we go down to Arkansas. And one of these defensive battles, and Arkansas has been such a thorn in our side over the years. And even when they're bad, they're hard to beat. And I don't remember this being a particularly good Arkansas team, but a 42-yard touchdown from Mitchell to McKinley won that game for us in the third quarter, and we just held them off towards the end. And then Florida comes to town the next week. I mean, a big deal. Steve Spurrier facing off against the Gators for the first time at South Carolina. I guess for the first time ever. He never played them at Duke, and I guess the Tampa Bay Bandits never played Florida either. But this was a noon or a 12:30 start too, which I vaguely remember being baffled. But I think there were a couple of other really high profile games that got the 3:30 afternoon and then the ESPN night game. So we had to play this game early in the day, and I'm assuming this is one you attended to.
Oh, absolutely.
And what was the who was the defensive lineman? His name is
Chris Tucker.
Chris Tucker. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He intercepted that pass and was practically impossible to bring down until he got down to about inside the 5-yard line. So this was a back and forth game, and the Sidney Rice. This is Sidney Rice had eight. I think I said eight games in a row, and this would have been the ninth. And he had there's one. One of the more famous Sidney Rice plays, where he takes a little out pattern, and it was a back shoulder pass, a short back shoulder pass, and beats a couple of defenders and streaks down the sidelines and is tackled inside the 5-yard line. He could have kept that streak alive, but Rice had a big game. He was amazing. And then Florida screwed something up at the end of that game. I think they were going to get the ball back, and they jumped off sides on the punt, or they roughed the kicker or something like that. And there was only a minute or a minute and a half left. And I stood up and I'm like, that's a penalty. That's a first down, and we can run the clock out. And I was in this state of disbelief. And I kept telling, I think my wife was with me, and I kept saying that's it. It's over. We're going to beat Florida. It's over, you know?
Yeah, and one of my favorite memories in Williams-Brice is the at least the student section, maybe the whole stadium, I don't quite remember, but just breaking out into the Gator Chomp as the minutes wore down. It was just unbelievable. Again, another team against which we had been very snake-bitten, got blown out by all throughout the 90s, and then had a shot at them when Zook was there and couldn't come through. So, yeah, I mean, this beating Florida and Tennessee in Steve Spurrier's first year was absolutely huge because, like I said, we'd beaten Georgia somewhat recently, so we at least knew that that was possible. But it really did feel impossible to beat Florida, especially. So that was very nice.
Right. And so we're 7-3, and Clemson's coming to town the next week. We're riding high.
Well, if I can interrupt you, can we talk about South Carolina having a 5-game winning streak going into Clemson?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, not having the bowl game being on the line going into it, like, that was so novel.
Right. That's a good call because we were always, you know, we knew we were going to lose to Tennessee. We knew we were going to lose to Florida. And then, you know, we would be 5-5 or something like that when we played Clemson, or 6-5. You're right. With a bowl game on the line, we knew we were bowl eligible heading into the Clemson game. So that's an excellent point. Just an unfamiliar feeling for us. And I think we were the better team. Is this the game where they converted? They had a 1st and 38 or something like that late in the game.
You know, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah. That does seem right. It's either this year or 2006.
Yeah, and they, I'm pretty sure.
No, because we won 2006, so either this one or 2007.
Yeah, I think it was because it was Charlie Whitehurst, and I believe this was Whitehurst's senior year because he never lost to us. So this must have been it. So yeah, they had a lead on us. I'm not sure if they had the lead or not. I just remember having it was almost a 1st and 40. And this game is actually online. I watched some of it not too long ago, as painful as it was. And I went to that stage of the game, and it was like a whatever 1st and 38, and they get 12 on 1st down, and you know, 7 on 2nd down and 15 on 3rd down, and it was just a killer. I don't know if my math is right there, but they got a 1st down. So that was a tough loss to take because there are very few years that we lose to Clemson that we think, wow, you know, I think we had the better team going into that game.
Yeah, this was a very rough game. It was really cold. Like, we had blankets out in the stadium, as I recall, and we're just awful on offense. Or maybe not. It looks like we had a pretty good 347 total offensive yards, but 3 interceptions from Blake Mitchell. If I'm looking at this right, he saved all 6 of his interceptions for the last 2 games of the season. So, yeah, it was a difficult game to watch, as you might glean from the 13-9 score with Clemson scoring in the towards the end of the 4th quarter there.
Yeah, so side note, I was at this game, and I was sitting with T-Bone in his seats, and before the game ever started, Clemson fan 2 or 3 rows in front of us was getting a little bit rowdy, and I'd never seen this side of T-Bone. T-Bone stood up and challenged the guy, told the guy, said, "We'll go outside right now, and I'll whip your ass." And T-Bone started walking that way. And T-Bone's wife was sitting there too. And the guy just kind of looked at him and turned around and sat down. And I was like, "T-Bone, that was impressive. I did not know you had that in you." He was fired up. So don't mess with T-Bone. I don't know if it's because it was the Clemson game or what. But anyway, nice little anecdote from that ball game. So we go to Shreveport, Louisiana for the Independence Bowl, December 30th of 2005. I remember this vividly because it was the same day as the Peach Bowl or the Chick-fil-A Bowl, and I had tickets to the Chick-fil-A Bowl, so it was going to be a great football day. I was going to watch this game and head down, and LSU and Miami were playing in the Chick-fil-A Bowl, so it was just going to be a great day of football. I had no question in my mind we were going to beat Missouri, right? I mean, we're in the SEC. Missouri's a middling Big Ten team. So, the way the game started out, we had a 21-0 lead at the end of the first quarter. And I'm kind of, I mean, I should know better as a Gamecock fan, but I'm kind of relaxed, right? Were you feeling kind of relaxed?
Oh, definitely. With that kind of absolutely, yeah.
And even at 28-14, feeling pretty good about that. But Missouri's had a quarterback named Brad Smith, who I don't know if he's still in the NFL, but has had a really good NFL career playing a variety of roles. And we just, well, you know what turned it around now that I'm looking at the box score? We were driving to go up 28-0, and they had a 99-yard interception return for a touchdown, which kind of turned the momentum in Missouri's favor. So I'd kind of forgotten about that till I saw that. Looked
out
at the box score.
Isn't that the most Blake Mitchell thing ever, though, to be driving to go up 28-0 and then just out of nowhere a 99-yard interception?
Yeah. Blake Mitchell's career was, just a strange guy. You know, he ran the option at LaGrange High School in Georgia, and he's similar to this guy that Georgia has. I think he's a freshman now that, attempted like 40 passes the whole season, but goes to an Elite 11 camp or a quarterback camp like that and is really impressive, strong arm, and that's why he got a scholarship offer to South Carolina. So I had just an odd career for that guy. He was never – Spurrier just kind of tolerated Mitchell, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, I was looking at his career stats today, and it's funny to see two quarterbacks in Blake Mitchell and Stephen Garcia who had – well, and this is, again, getting ahead, but, you know, just – you know, he had a pretty okay year in 2005. I think I remember it better than I remember it more fondly than a sober look at the stats bear out.
Right.
As I was kind of reviewing it today, I kind of had this perception in my mind as Blake Mitchell is this hotshot gunslinger, but yeah, not really that much.
Not so much. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then just having senior years where they just absolutely crapped the bed. So yeah, weird guy who, like you said, Elite 11 quarterback, I think 4 stars. Certainly a lot of people were very excited about him and kind of thought that he was, you know, we're finally going to have like a top-notch quarterback again. So it's disappointing how his career kind of turned out.
Yeah, so, you know, bottom line is Missouri stormed back and tied the game, took the lead, and Mitchell threw an interception late in that game that kind of sealed it for Missouri, the win for Missouri, 38-31. So we had another bowl loss, and we ended the season after the 5-game win streak with 2 straight losses. And I went to, you know, I got tickets to the Chick-fil-A Bowl to go watch Miami and LSU, two of the premier programs, you know, in the history of college football. And all I could think about was that stinking Independence Bowl. I mean, I was just so bummed the whole time sitting there in the Georgia Dome thinking about that. Those are the kind of losses that stick with you for a few days.
Yeah, well, I had to drive all the way back from Shreveport, Louisiana with that game on my mind.
You were there, huh?
Yeah, I went to the game. I went to the game with my girlfriend and another couple, and yeah, it's very emotionally difficult to drive all the way back from Western Louisiana after losing to Missouri. And then that game even got more depressing as time wore on because, you know, with the way the next couple of years would go under Spurrier, and you would see then Missouri kind of take off and under Chase Daniel at quarterback and have like a top 10 team. And at least I felt like, well, if we've got Steve Spurrier coming in here and we can't at least do what Missouri is doing, then will we ever be able to do anything? So just sort of that game is Missouri passing us always kind of depressed me a little bit.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I feel your pain. I went to the PapaJohns.com Bowl in Birmingham, which we'll get to in
That was even worse. So painful.
I mean, yeah, so we'll get to that later. But so the Gamecocks finished Spurrier's first season at 7-5. All things considered, you know, there were glimpses when you look at the Tennessee game and the Florida game, you know, that maybe Spurrier will actually be able to do something with this program after a, you know, kind of a slow start. So it was a fun year. I think most Gamecock fans, despite the last two games, probably remember this year pretty fondly because of a couple of those victories towards the end of the season.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, especially with the way our mindset was back then, you know, beating Tennessee and Florida was absolutely huge. After that, I mean, you could almost do no wrong. So, yeah, I have very fond memories of that season.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up our look at the 2005 season, Steve Spurrier's first year at the helm. Connor, anything we missed during this season that that you would want to comment on?
Well, I did jot down in some notes that I took earlier that this was the final season of the much-hyped Ricardo Hurley.
Yes.
Who I remember sitting around the radio listening to some national radio station, and they mentioned that South Carolina signs the number one linebacker in whatever class that would have been, Ricardo Hurley, and just how he never really did much of anything. But I don't know that I had much to say about that other than that's kind of interesting.
I remember, Ricardo Hurley, and there was a guy, this was way before your time, a guy named J.J. Brown. Have you ever heard of J.J. Brown?
There's a certain lyrical quality to the name that sort of makes it sound familiar, but I'll have to say no, I don't.
Yeah, J.J. Brown was he was either number one linebacker or defensive end in the country, was a native of South Carolina and went to Michigan. I'm trying to think of what year. This was probably the late 80s. I'll have to go back and look this up. Went to Michigan, hated it there, transferred back to South Carolina, and I remember how excited we were to have J.J. Brown, and I think he ended his career at South Carolina as a third-string tight end or something like that. So, you know, we've had plenty of guys that didn't pan out, which makes the, you know, Lattimore and Clowney thing that much more amazing, because I think we get these guys, we're always a little bit a little bit hesitant because of some of the folks in our past that haven't quite panned out. But I think we can say that Lattimore and Clowney have panned out pretty well.
Yeah. So, talking about the defense, like there were a couple, we didn't talk a whole lot about the defense, you know, as we're kind of running through it, but we had some badass dudes in the secondary, Jonathan Joseph, Coach Simpson, Fred Bennett.
Yeah.
That was a pretty strong group.
Yeah. All NFL guys. Yeah. So yeah, there was some talent sprinkled throughout those first few Spurrier teams. I think that probably the difference in what we see today than those first years is, and I sound like such a typical blogger, but is the depth that we have on the team now compared to what we had back then. But yeah, there were some definitely some good defensive players.
Was this the year where we did that ridiculous thing where we would have the defensive lineman like stand up and then like get back down, and I don't even know what you call that. Do you remember that?
It might have been. I do remember that. So they had, you know, when the ball was snapped, they had absolutely no leverage, and for some reason,
right.
So for some reason, whoever the defensive coach was thought it was a good idea. Yeah, I remember. I don't know if that was 05 or not, but I do remember that.
Yeah, I remember we had a co-defensive coordinator situation going on, and whoever was like in charge of that like sort of got demoted, and Ty Nix became the co-defensive coordinator, if memory serves.
Yeah, I remember. I know T-Bone hates Chris Kosh. I always think of Chris Kosh when I think of bad defensive coaches at South Carolina, but I think he was gone by then. But yeah, so we've come a long way, Connor.
Indeed, we have.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join and go through the 2005 season. Appreciate it a lot.
Ah, you bet. Pleasure's all mine.
And you guys can catch Connor on his podcast, The Half Cocked Show. And the Twitter account is at Half Cocked Show. And he also has his personal account is at Meet Me at Taps, TAPPS. So be sure to check him out and check out his writing at garnetandblackattack.com. That's going to do it for this edition of Buckshots. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time when we talk about the 2006 edition of the South Carolina Gamecocks. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon. City. I make a lot of noise, cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my old Studley Roy. And the girls say, save a horse, ride a cowboy. Everybody says, save a horse, ride a cowboy. Well, I don't give a dang about nothing. I'm singing and bling blinging while the girls are drinking. Long necks down and I will trade old Leroy on my Chevrolet for your Escalade or your Freak Parade. I'm the only John Wayne left in this town. And I saddle up my horse and I ride into the city. I make a lot of noise cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my old stud Leroy. And the girls say, save a horse.
That's what she said in the back of my truck bed as I was getting buzzed on suds out on some backcountry road. We were flying high, fine as wine, having ourselves a big and rich time. And I was going just about as far as she'd let me go. But her evaluation of my cowboy reputation had me begging for salvation all night long. So I took her out gigging frogs, introduced her to my old bird dog, and sang her every Willie Nelson song I could think of, and we made love. And I saddle up my horse, and I ride him through the city. I make a lot of noise, cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my old stud Leroy, and the girls say, save a horse, ride a cowboy. Everybody says, save a horse, ride a cowboy.